Hello everyone, and welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach, and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I'm very excited to have a very special guest today, world-renowned trumpet player, former Prince band member, 11-time Grammy-winning arranger. Philip Lassiter is here to talk about his band Filthy and his solo works, and their new album coming out this year, Baba Yaga. Help me welcome Philip.
Oh, hey, Cliff.
How's everything going with you today?
Everything's going great. How are you doing?
Very, very, very well. Thank you. Nice. Very excited to talk to you today. I hear we have some mutual friends. I spoke with John Hines that we're going to have him on an episode soon. He said he knew you very well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. John,
cool.
He's coming at me through Hadrian Farrat.
Right. Yeah,
John. I don't know that I've actually met John, but we've been emailing, and I'm going to be doing some work with him.
Nice, man. Very cool. He's a good friend, and I love their stuff, and I love your stuff. So very excited to have you on and chat with you today about, I mean, your prolific career with so many different things. So very excited to have you today.
Thanks, man. I'm excited to be interviewed.
Let's get into it. Let's talk about your last record out on Rope-A-Dope, Party Crashers, one I've been listening to this last weekend with Filthy, and it says the after your two previous solos, which we'll get into. But on this one, you teamed up with vocalist Elliot Yaman. So I wanted to kind of talk about that, how that album came to be, how you picked the personnel, your process. And I'm told that Filthy is a 14-piece band with a 4-piece horn section. Is that correct?
Yeah, sometimes 5-piece horn section. Yeah,
wow.
The number kind of fluctuates depending on the size of the stage, basically. How much square footage we've got determines how many people we bring.
Yeah, you got a P-Funk situation where sometimes you have more people on the stage than right in front of you.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So you want to talk about Party Crashers?
Let's start with that. Yeah, we've been having that album on repeat this weekend, getting into your stuff. We listen to your solo stuff too, but getting into Party Crashers, your work with Elliot, and kind of like how that album kind of came to be, or how Filthy became to be as an extension of you.
Yeah. I met Elliot. I started coming to L.A. and spending time here, and just it was kicking around the idea of moving here. And so I was spending time here, and he and I met through a mutual friend and one of my colleagues from the Prince camp, a guy named Morris Hayes. And so we actually met on a benefit concert that we were doing together. And, I didn't know who Elliot was, and we were just standing on stage doing sound check, and he sound checked the song, and then that was my first time hearing him sing. And I said, wow, man, you're really good. I had no idea it was Elliot Yaman, you know. And then what happened was I was looking for a place to sublet when I would come to town, you know, for weeks, sometimes months at a time. I was looking for a place, and I heard that that he had a big house in Sherman Oaks, and we had met on this gig and hit it off. And so I reached out to him and was like, hey, man, I hear you might have a room to sublet, and just wanted to let you know I'm looking. And he said, as a matter of fact, I do. And so I wound up, staying with him and subletting with him for like a year on and off as my wife and I were getting like acclimated into the city. And we became really good friends and started writing songs together. You know, I started the band and was doing the band thing, and he was coming and supporting the shows. And then before long, I had him on stage with me, like when we feature Elliot on this song. And then it just eventually evolved into a full album, you know, that I decided to feature him on. A nice collaboration that we had.
Yeah, it sounds very organic in that mix. And that's also very cool. I like when things kind of happen like that. So then how did you kind of build that band? You know, getting 14 pieces is not easy. How did you pick the players? How did you decide the songs? Like, how did that kind of come to be?
Well, Los Angeles is full of so much talent. That happened pretty organically too, because I was spending time here and getting to know different people, and just networking with different players and stuff. And it just kind of came to me, you know, a lot of the players in my band are people who wanted to make music with me as well as I with them. So we met, I met a lot of the musicians through a group here in LA called Jam Card, held up, led by Elmo Lovano. Jam Card's been a really great source of connecting the musical community in LA and just making it feel like more of a family and a communal kind of thing, more so than maybe anything that I've seen here in town. You know, it started in a house, and they just outgrew the house. And I was at the very first Jam Card event. It was a networking event, and the Brandon Brown Collective performed. And then I spoke with Elmo afterwards, and Filthy performed at the very next Jam Card event. Yeah, we were part of their beginning, and they were part of ours. So, you know, that was one way that I met a lot of the musicians. You know, it wasn't hard to the thing about Los Angeles is there's so much talent and so many people wanting to be involved in cool stuff, you know, that and just wanting to be a part of something communal, that it's never been difficult to find players.
So then, you know, having your work with Filthy, and that's an amazing album. Let's talk a little bit about your previous solo work. So you had Teal Mode, you had Dreams, you had a Filthy record under your name. And then, you know, what kind of was the progression between that and Filthy? Like, where does Filthy begin and Philip Lassiter end?
Okay, that's a good question. Well, I look at it like this. Like, Filthy is kind of like an alter ego, you know? I kind of transform when I take the stage as Filthy. You know, it's definitely like an experimental thing. It's got jazz undertones and gospel undertones and world undertones, but it's definitely a funk party. It's just like one facet of what I do. It's more like myself as an artist and as a creative type, and it's given me an opportunity to just experiment and just a creative outlet for me as a songwriter, as a singer-songwriter, as a producer. But I think of like myself and my name and what that means. It's more like the broader spectrum of it all, and all of the different things that I do, which is, you know, Philip Lassiter, the horn and string arranger. I do a lot of work as a freelance arranger, you know, gospel music and pop music, and did some work with Prince, and a lot of records with Kirk Franklin. And so, you know, that's a part of me. And then there's, you know, basically it's basically Philip Lassiter is the overall, that's me, you know. And then I have all of these different irons in the fire. There's, you know, I'm working on an audio library right now, sample library. You know, I do a lot of work overseas as well, and doing collaborations. And I'm trying to get more into production and electronic production, and working on pop music. So musically, I'm just kind of all over the board. But Filthy has always been something for me to just kind of let go of the parameters and just kind of let it fly. You know, just try, experiment, and be completely myself. So that, you know, that's the difference. And we're actually, funny you mentioned it, because we're actually working on branding that right now, working on a new website. And, you know, we're trying to figure out what that's going to look like. And it's going to be Philip Lassiter, but it's a Philip Lassiter website with all the different facets of what I do. And also, you know, I'm a clinician and a teacher, an educator. And so, you know, I'm really passionate about that, talking to kids, young musical minds in the making, and helping to inspire them. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I think that's great to have different buckets and different outlets to experiment and to not be pigeonholed in that way. I saw also on the record, you know, had Corey Henry on there, amazing stuff with Sucky Puppy and the solo stuff, and then Bernard Wright. But kind of how was it working with them?
Oh, well, Bernard was a mentor of mine for like a year and a half when I lived in Dallas. We were inseparable, you know. He helped me when I was first starting performing and recording my own original music. He was right there with me. And he was just a huge inspiration and just a huge mentor for me musically. I think my whole concept, my whole perception, my perspective just changed when I spent time with him, you know, on every level. Musically, it just blew my mind. And he did that for a lot of people. You know, he did that for Corey Henry. Although they didn't spend time together, just through records, you know. Yeah, I mean, he did that for Snarky Puppy. Uh-huh. A lot of people don't know, but that, you know, he was a big influence on Mike League and Robert Seawright, who was, you know, was the original drummer, and the whole band. They all got to spend time with him, the original members. They all got to spend time with him. And just, you know, he's like the Master Yoda of music. I mean, you just don't get any better than that. I've been around the world and I've, you know, hung out with Prince and all of these, you know, famous people. And I've lived in New York and Nashville and D.C. and L.A. and Dallas. And I've never come across anybody like Bernard Wright. You know, I would definitely put Bernard on that same plane as hanging out with Prince. It's like the same. I would have loved to have been in the same room with those two guys together having a conversation. I think it would have been either really delightful or a complete disaster. Either way, it would have been thoroughly entertaining.
I could definitely see that. So, yeah, so tell me a little bit about your work with Prince and MPG, and, you know, how was that working with one of the most prolific funk, soul, rock musicians of all time?
Wow, it was so surreal. You know, it's like it doesn't really hit you until, you know, it's all over. It was life-changing in so many ways, you know. I mean, there was the obvious performing in front of that many people. A lot of the obvious things that you would expect, you know, that I would say, that most people would experience. But then there were some surprises, you know. I was really surprised by how humble he was towards the music. When it came to making music, for him it was, you know, it was a search. He didn't assume to know the answer. He liked to say things like, let's try it. Somebody mm-hmm. had an idea, you know, let's try it. But what if we, well, let's try it. Let's hear it. I don't know. In other words, I don't know. And I think that's really powerful, man, for a man like that to say, let's try it. Essentially saying, I'm not sure, like, I need to hear it, and then we'll know. And that was a lesson in and of itself. It's like, you know, it's an experiment. Music is an experiment. Art is an experiment. It's just recognizing what you like and what others are going to resonate with. That's, I guess, what makes musicians great or made him a genius. It was also really cool, just honestly, just to be around him when he would play guitar. Like, if he had picked up the guitar, it was like time stopped. And he's one of the greatest improvisers I've ever encountered. I mean, just total commitment to every note and just it coming out of his soul. Like, he's just a complete, like, what's the word, like, catalyst for the music. It was just like just a channel for the gods to just communicate to us through his guitar. It was just wild, man, because, like, it'd be just in a rehearsal or something. And he didn't play a lot, you know. He mostly listened and, you know, acted as the musical director. He was the musical director. His guitar would always be set up, though, just in case he might get inspired and to play. And that would happen. Sometimes he would just, at the end of a rehearsal, we'd be rehearsing something and we'd be on a jam part, and he would just grab his guitar and play a solo. And it was the baddest shit anybody's ever heard.
I believe that.
Like, was anybody recording that? I need to hear that again. It was like that kind of wow. And we're all pretty good at what we do. We're all pretty good improvisers, too, so we're not easy to impress. But we're all just like, wow, that was just extraterrestrial, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you see that, you know, when you see him playing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with Tom Petty on my guitar gently weeps, like, that solo's ridiculous. And
yeah,
it's just, you know.
But you're not surprised by it when you see him on stage performing. It's like, yeah, you know, he had to gear up for it. He had to, you know, he had to, whatever. But no, like, in the middle of a rehearsal, you're just not expecting that kind of brilliance. But that's what he was all the time. I mean, I feel like as an improviser, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm 100%. I don't feel like I bat 1,000. I'm trying to get there, but he batted 1,000.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy to have seen it in such an intimate setting that way. That's probably why Clapton said, you know, when asked how he felt about being the best guitarist, he's like, I don't know, ask Prince. but yeah, man, so, I mean, let's talk about your career more. I saw in your bio that you're an 8-time Grammy Award-winning arranger. Is that right? And you've worked with so many people, Kirk Franklin, Ariana Grande, Fantasia, Kelly Rowland, Jill Scott, Fred Hammond, Al Jarreau, Anthony Hamilton, Ledisi, Regina Bell, Timbaland. And the last time I actually talked to you, we were talking about you being nominated for a gospel record with CeCe Winans. So, like, how did you get those gigs? How did your name come up in that situation? And, you know, does any one record or artist or anything you've arranged kind of stick out in your mind? It's like, wow, that was an amazing thing that I did or worked on.
Well, that CeCe Winans record was amazing. That came to me through another friend of mine and mentor. His name is Tommy Sims. He wrote Change the World, speaking of Eric Clapton.
Oh, wow.
Tommy's just one of the greatest producers on the planet. And he's produced for CeCe through the years. And she calls him the best, the absolute best, and referring to producers. And so he put me on that album. And then I did some strings for the Tori Kelly record, won 2 Grammys after that. Or it might have been, it was the year after CeCe won. And then Tori Kelly. And then this year, Kirk Franklin did another 1 or 2. I have 11 now.
Wow. Wow, I need to update my information.
I need to update my information, actually. You probably read that somewhere on the web, and I'm currently trying to clean up my web presence.
Oh, man, that's amazing. So how does that feel? Like, I mean, that, you know, getting 1 Grammy used to be, like, impossible, and now 11. I mean, what does that do for you? Like, how does that feel, being like, man, my work has been received the top honor, top respect?
You know, I've actually never been to the Grammys.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I'm going to try to go at some point. You know, I've just been busy, man, just working on the music. That stuff is it's great. It's a great feeling to have. And it certainly helps one's name for, you know, and it helps get to generate work and opportunities to work with other people. But, you know, I don't know if it's just me, but I just have this innate drive to strive further. So I don't think about it too much, to be honest with you, man.
Yeah, that's how you get from 8 to 11, and you're just like, I'm just on to the next thing. But it makes sense that you win a lot of Grammys and work with a lot of gospel artists. You kind of have those roots. Your father was a preacher, and you were from the Dallas area. How did you get started in music, and do you ever look back and say, wow, like, look where I am now from where I began?
Now, that certainly, you know, I came up in a modest Pentecostal, Southern home, Southern family. I was introduced to music really early. Nobody in my family was necessarily musical, but my sister played a little piano. And so I started lessons as well. But I just had an ear for jazz. I always just loved jazz and gospel music. And so I would get really excited whenever I would hear that. And, you know, I did music in school. I always say, like, I learned to read music in school, but I learned to play music in church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I remember I was getting my master's in Oklahoma, of all places. And I remember driving around and listening to Kirk Franklin and God's Property. this album did incredibly well. It was this breakout gospel album from this group from Dallas. And it's still to this day one of the freshest albums. And it was one of Kirk Franklin's breakout records. I remember listening to
Stomp. It was amazing.
Yeah, I remember listening to that record. And Stomp, yeah. But you listen to Faith and some of the other songs. And I Hear Music Up Above My Head from the Negro Spiritual Above My Head. Man, that record, I was listening to that record for a couple of years. Just changed my life. Next thing I know, I'm living in Dallas, Texas. I got my first gig fresh out of college, working at this big church as a musical director. And then lo and behold, I don't even realize it, but I'm in the same town as all of these musicians and singers that were on that record, including Kirk Franklin. So I'm just going about my business, but I like to get out, and I always push myself to get out in the community and hear good live music, because I figure that's where I'll find the best musicians in town. Right? I was right.
Right.
First time I went out. First night I went out in Dallas, Texas. Now, mind you, I had a job. I was making a great salary for a kid my age. I'm 25, you know, for this was 2000 on the nose. I'm making a great living. I don't need to be out at the club. I'm not looking for gigs. You see what I'm saying? I'm looking for music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for music. So first gig I go to, who's there? Bernard Wright and Keith Anderson. And I didn't know who these people were. I just showed up to this jazz club that I heard had good jazz. And so there they were. And Keith Anderson wound up being one of the saxophone players in the Prince section that I hired. And so I was in Dallas. I was doing some recording on the side, doing my church gig. But then I was also doing some recording in town. There was a studio that came available to me through a friend that I made. And it belonged to Charlie Pride, the only black country singer ever in the history.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Charlie Pride owned this studio. And I would record there, and I did a couple of recordings, and word started traveling around about my horn section and my horn writing. And it didn't take long. And the next thing I knew, I got my first record. It was a small gospel record, but all of these people were really closely connected with Kirk Franklin. So that went well. And the next thing you know, I'm in the room with Kirk. And all of these people that I used to listen to, I'm really good friends with now. And we've all worked together for many years. So, yeah, it's a trip when you look back and you think, wow, I used to read that person's name in the credits. I never thought they'd be one of my closest friends, or, you know, we'd go on to make all this music together. And then, let alone, that's going to lead me a decade and a half later to meeting Prince and going on the road with him, which led to me meeting my wife, and now we have a son that's going to be 2 in July.
Wow.
So life is a trip, man.
It seems like it just kind of all came together, but that sounds like some divine providence coming your way to line up all of those things. So that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, when I talk to kids about this stuff, I tell them, I'm like, you know, it was the grind. It was the daily. It was the daily working on records that most people will never hear. But working on those records, it was like, you know, I wasn't getting rich or anything, but I was making a living and honing my skills. I mean, that's kind of what got me there, I think. And that's why I tell these kids now, it's like, you know, you got to decide what it is that you love to do, and you just got to do it. Commit your life to it, to the discipline of it, you know?
You got to get in there. I mean, you paid your dues making those records. Even just putting yourself out there, I mean, that's not always easy to just go up to a Bernard Wright and say, hey, I play music too, let's do something, or mentor me, or however that kind of comes about. You have to have confidence to put your foot forward.
Right. That's the thing, man. But I really believe that, you know, and it took me a long time to get there, and it wasn't, it wasn't easy. But I wasn't even, honestly, I wasn't even trying to get a gig with Prince, or I wasn't trying to get 11 Grammys. I didn't set out saying, I'm going to get a Grammy. I never said that. I never even really thought it was possible. So if I can do all of this with really no, without setting any intention at all, just doing the work and loving the work, right? What can I do, like, between now and the rest of the time I got, if I actually set some intention? It's a trip, right?
That definitely is a trip. But I like your philosophy around that. I read that you said, stay humble and hungry, get into the practice of admitting that you don't have something, and then you can really, really grow. And I like that because I think that's true. I think no matter where you are, I mean, even speaking with you today, working with Prince, working with Bernard Wright, working with Corey Henry, doing some amazing work, winning 11 Grammys and your arranging work, you still sound very humble and still, you know, like that Prince work ethic, like, you know, it's about the music and not knowing everything and be willing to try new things and continually to still put yourself out there.
Yeah, I think humility is important. It's and gratitude. And they kind of like, I think they kind of, you know, hang out together. They're like friends, humility and gratitude. You know, they work side by side, hand in hand. And I think it those two things in particular, like, help us as creatives to stay close to, like, the creative process and our authentic selves. And that's super important because, like, right now, man, it's like the pandemic's going on. And, you know, the first thing everybody that I knew artistically was like, man, I don't feel like making anything right now. Like, I can't go anywhere. I can't experience anything. I can't see any of my friends. I don't have any inspiration to draw from. Like, you got all this time in the world, should be like making like 15 albums, right? Well, it's not that easy, you know? I just think it's important for us to keep feeding ourselves. And remember, we're humans first. We're human beings first. So we got to take care of our basic human needs, you know? Like, we got to treat ourselves well. We got to invest in ourselves and our mind, body, spirit. And that's what I've been trying to do. But I've also been very productive during this time. But I'm trying to learn now. And this, it's weird. It's been like phases of this pandemic, right? There's ways you felt, like, in the beginning, and then there was the way we felt, you know, in the next month, and then there's, like, how we feel now. And I think everybody's a little different, but there's a common thread there. And I'm at the place now where I'm like, okay, I got to stop beating myself up to be productive. Like, I've been very, very productive. So, you know, I think it's about trying to find balance, and you can kind of open your mind up and give it room to be creative again and to, you know, just to kind of relax a little bit and then let the whisperer speak to you, you know, the creative, the muse, you know, the angels.
No, yeah, I definitely like that. So then moving into that, what's next for you? I saw you had a new single kind of recently, Make America Love Again, that video out on YouTube. Doing some promo for some pre-orders for the new album entitled Baba Yaga coming out sometime this year. So what can fans and new listeners expect? And you have an amazing lineup, too. I saw the drummer from Ghost Notes in there and a bunch of other people. So just what's happening next for you?
Yeah, I've never been so excited about dropping a record. This record is so special. Musically, I feel like it's really experimental. I did, like, as you said, I did some work with Robert Seawright, who was also part of that God's Property record I was mentioning earlier, he was the original drummer and keyboard player with Snarky Puppy. And he worked with everybody from, you know, Erykah Badu to Snoop Dogg. And, but now he has a band called Ghost Note. They're doing really well with Mono Neon. And so Sput and I did some collaborations together, and what we did was I wanted to blend, like, modern, you know, hip-hop, Jay Dilla-type swag with, like, jazz vocal writing, like, in the style of D'Angelo meets Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross, or meets, like, Manhattan Transfer, or something like that. So wow. Four singers performing together, like in a circle. We filmed it all. Everything's filmed in docu-style. And it's this really interesting, creative, like, mesh of hip-hop and jazz. There's two songs that are like that that I worked with Sput on. And the rest of the record is, you know, it's kind of all over the place. It's what you expect from a Filthy record. It's like a lot of funk, a lot of jazz. There's some really interesting mashups. And I have some really big surprises, too. Actually, we jumped into reggae on this record. We have two reggae songs. And one of the reggae songs is going to feature one of the biggest stars of all Latin music. His name is Juan Luis Guerra. And Juan Luis Guerra sold over 70 million records.
That's the big time right there.
Yeah, so Juan Luis Guerra saw me performing with Prince at the Montreux Jazz Festival and saw a horn section, and he said, I want to know who wrote those horns. And we became friends. So he looked me up. Next thing you know, he's commenting on my Instagram. I'm flipping out because I know who the guy is. Most Americans don't know who he is, but I know who he is because my lady is from the Caribbean, and I've played in salsa bands through the years, and so I know who the guy is. And we became friends, and now he's agreed to be featured on one of the reggae songs that we have. That's a really special song because we wrote it for our son, Arrow, who's two, and we wrote it while she was still pregnant with him. So it's a really, really cool song. It's like a combination of I say it's like Bob Marley meets the Beatles. It's a really cool song. We got Robert Spussy right on drums. And we also, one of the songs that I did with Sput, we also have another big feature. This person heard the song and said, I want to play on it. Ask them if I can play on it. And I had to say yes, because it was David Page from Toto.
Oh, wow. You got to have that.
So David Page from Toto is on the title cut Baba Yaga, which is about, it's Slavic folklore about a witch that goes around seeking revenge on evildoers. At least that's our interpretation of it. There's different interpretations of it out there. But this is basically our Me Too song. It's a song that was kind of inspired around the time with the R. Kelly stuff dropped. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to write a song that was empowering females, and we're showcasing an incredible singer named Mariah Maxwell. She's a new singer from DC. Went to Howard University. She's a virtuoso. She's been singing with Kanye West, and she's going to launch her own stuff. She's already launching her own music. She's going to have a great career. You're going to hear about her a lot. I can't say enough good things about her. She's featured on this thing, and it's kind of got this Esperanza Spalding vibe on it with her vocals.
That's cool.
So, yeah, there's some virtuosity in there that will blow people's minds. I'm super excited about that. And I'm featuring other singers. Like there's this great singer who sings with Erykah Badu. His name is Durant Bernard. He has a real strong presence, social media presence. He's a really hilarious guy and just a phenomenal singer. Featuring him on a couple songs. I'm featuring Mackenzie Green, who has been doing the Prince and the NTG tribute band. He's been standing in for Prince on vocals. And so there's a lot of really great, talented people that are on this, and I just can't wait to unveil it. Right now, we're just we're making plans. We're trying to get my web presence organized so that if you find me in one place, you can easily find me on your preferred platform. So, and also we're trying to get my content more organized. So, you know, I have a lot of albums. Some of them are under my name, Philip Lassiter, Philip with one L, two S's and Lassiter. And then some of them are under Filthy and Filthy Funk, Filthy with a PH, Funk, F-U-N-K. So, you know, if you search both of those, you can find all my records. But what we're going to try to do now is make it all accessible to you. So it's one click away, and if you find me in Philip Lassiter, you can discover Filthy. If you discover Filthy, you can also find out the man behind it. Just try to clean it all up so, you know, you can, you know, we want to make it really easy for people to access my music.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the wave of the future where people are going, especially them searching and looking for online. You want to make sure that they kind of it's easy for them to find you and to like you and to subscribe and to
right.
know when new stuff's coming out. I love that about Spotify, when it just pushes stuff into my new daily mix and
yeah.
my new releases and stuff. So that's awesome. So then, is there anyone in the future you would like to work with that you haven't yet worked with, but you're saying, oh, man, I would love to make a record with them?
Yeah, I'd like to work with Mark Ronson. I think Ronson and I would have a really good vibe in the studio. I just started working with Rodney Jerkins, Dark Child.
Oh, yeah.
So he and I, we just did a movie together called The High Note. The High Note. I think it's it just came out or it's about to drop. And so that was definitely one on my bucket list. I've always been a fan of his. You know, I don't know. I don't think about that a whole lot too much either, to be honest with you. There's definitely people I would like to work with. I must not think about it too much, honestly. I've always wanted to work with Quincy Jones, but I don't really know what capacity that would be, because I don't know that he's even really making music at this point.
He's kind of just pushing people out. Like, I know he did a lot of work kind of championing and Jacob Collier and some other proteges that he's been pushing out the last couple of years.
I believe it's more executive kind of stuff, though, you know?
Right, of course.
But, you know, I don't know. I don't guess I think about it enough. I worked with so many people that I admire. I got to play with the Isley Brothers. They're some of my favorite songwriters ever. You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have like a huge catalog of
yeah.
so many decades of different genres and stuff that they've
yeah.
done.
Yeah. I love their music, man. I like Mark Ronson because he's old school, and I'm old school, and he's all about the funk, too. He has a way of making it modern and accessible and for you know, people today, which I really like. But, you know, I haven't really been too focused on who I want to work with lately. I've been more just focused on, you know, what do I want to work on? And I've just been trying to think about that more, you know, like what am I going to create? What am I going to build myself, as opposed to being connected with somebody else that's already built a great thing. Does that make sense?
No, it definitely makes sense. So then for my last question, what would you say you want to be your legacy? Like, what do you want to be most remembered for? I mean, you've done your band, you've done your solo stuff, you've worked with tons of people, you have arranged a lot of things. And I really liked someone that was talking about music saying, like, I heard a Philip Lasseter, you know, as an arranger, and then I heard him, you know, when I heard him on his own stuff. So how does that kind of, like, focus on your legacy?
Yeah, that's a good question and a tough one. You know, without revealing too much, I plan on one day, and hopefully not in the too distant future, forming like a mega giant epic ensemble. It's something that would just bring all of the genres that I love together. I've got a really clear picture of it in my head and a pretty clear sound of it in my ears. And the purpose of it would be for social awareness, to speak out against social injustice, to point us towards the future and towards the light, which is we need to take care of each other and we need to take care of the planet. I believe that project is going to best represent what I want my legacy to be about. But
that's great. I love the consciousness of all of your music,
yeah.
you know, talking about the Me Too movement, talking about, you know, just love and of course the ecology and the environment. And, you know, I think that's great. I think if anyone can make a super group and have, you know, be a catalyst for change, I think you are definitely much, much well on your way.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
So I thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us again for Deeper Groove, sponsored by California Soul Music. We will most certainly circle back to you once it is out so you can hear it and see it. And hopefully we'll just, you know, be able to keep in touch and keep following your illustrious career. We love your music and,
awesome.
You know, definitely want to hear more from you. So excited about the new record and what is to come.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. We'll be talking soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I would like to thank our special guest today, trumpeter Philip Lassiter, here to talk about Filthy and their upcoming album, Baba Yaga. I would like to also thank our engineer who mixed and mastered this recording, Tim Hall and 1192 Studios. If you like what you heard today and want to hear more, you can visit us online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves. Until then, stay safe, be well.